Good morning and welcome to Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I am Ali Baba.
And he's being held against his will here. We forced him to do the show because Richard is still in Saudi covering LEAP. Let's go through the news real quick. Saudi Arabia's first man robot didn't leave a great first impression. Find out why on this episode. Etihad, Abu Dhabi's national carrier, expects to exceed last year's annual profits this year as it prepares for a public listing. And then a special sports segment coming up with Alibaba, the one and only. And also on the show after this, economist Dr. Suhaib on financial education. Ali, I want to ask you, and excuse my ignorance, but the Gutra and the Agal?
Yes.
It's you wear it in different ways depending on where you're from the GCC.
Yes. Basically, you start off with the Kandura. We call it Thob.
How many Kanduras? You call it Thob because you're from Bahrain.
Yes.
So you don't call it Kandura, you call it Thob.
Thob, yeah. Okay. The first time I heard Kandura was when I came to Emirat.
Really?
Yes. Because we call this Thob and.
One question. Nah. How many white thobes do you have, and how are they always clean? How? it's a legitimate question.
Well, when we go to the tailor for the thobes, we pick the best quality of cloth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these cloths come from Indonesia, Japan, you know, and they range from 100 dirhams to 200. You know, depending on the quality.
Right. But I mean, whenever I'm wearing something white, I always have to spill something on it, like a coffee, or I feel like I'm jinxing you and you're going to end up spilling something on your thob.
The trick is immediately with thobs, immediately, like for me, for example, immediately when I reach home, I immediately throw it into the washing machine, turn it on.
So you don't just have like two backups in your car? Because I heard some people do.
Oh, backup in the car, no. But at home, yes, I have like five or six.
Okay,
you
makes
know,
sense.
Thobes that I can go through. I have like three for winter, and then majority, the rest is for, it's white. So for, it's white is for any occasion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but mostly for summer. And that one was specifically for winter. If you see colored, thick, you know, thob, that is for winter.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, the Gutra wa Agal. I'm saying it correctly, right?
Gutra wa Agal.
Gutra wa Agal?
Gut.
You're doubting yourself now.
I'm doubting myself.
I made you doubt yourself.
Yes. Gutra wa Agal.
Okay, so tell me the differences between the different GCC countries and
okay.
It's like an art, it's like a science that goes into it.
We start off with, let's compare with Emirati Amani, they're similar, but the difference is the karkusha, the
okay, where the buttons are basically.
Yeah, right. They don't have buttons. They it's only from here to here.
Okay, and from the middle of the chest for those listening on podcast, mid-chest to neck?
Yes, okay. Mid-chest to neck, yeah?
Okay.
And they don't have a collar.
Uh-huh,
so Emiratis and Omanis don't have a collar.
Right,
yeah?
Okay.
But the rest of the GCC do. Now, this is where the collar comes into play. Bahrainis don't have the sort of the triangular collar, which is like a normal shirt.
Yes.
You get what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes.
And some people design it, either you'll see it more in Qatar and in Saudi, where the triangular shape is either longer or short. You know,
okay.
It depends.
Okay.
But they're both similar in terms of that, okay?
Right.
In terms of that.
Okay.
Kuwaitis have a smaller collar. So if you go to a khayyat, for example, in Bahrain, and you tell
him, khayyat is tailor, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry,
yeah.
Tailor.
It's okay.
and you tell him, I want a Kuwaiti thob. So immediately the collar would be half the size of what I have right now, which is, I think, about 2 inches over here. Yeah, 2 inches. And the Kuwaiti is like 1 inch.
Right.
Maybe 1.5 inches.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And the
going into this.
Yeah.
The Ghitra for majority of the GCC, they wear checkered right?
I think it's important to know this, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. Just so our listeners and viewers understand why we're talking about this.
Yeah.
I think it's important for, you know, a lot of business people here to kind of get a better understanding of the culture.
Yes.
Correct?
Of course. 100%.
Okay. We're going to move on to news in a while, but I do want to hear this. Okay.
You'll know the difference between professional, like there is a professional way of wearing it when you're going to work, which is how I'm wearing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of, we say in Arabic, kashkha.
Kashkha, mkashkh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yes,
which
yes.
means like dressed up, right?
Yes, you're dressed well. يعني, like it has a different weight, you know?
Impact.
In terms of it being white or red checkered, with white, white and red checkered, and then just plain white.
Mm-hmm.
That is worn across the GCC, similarly to how I'm wearing it right now.
Right.
But for the podcast, if you're hearing it, it's quite difficult to explain to you.
It's quite difficult to explain, yeah. So we're going to move on, but do watch the video if you guys want to get to know a little bit more about that, because it is very interesting.
Yes.
cool. Gosh, I mean, I wanted to talk about Shark Tank, but I guess we can talk about it a little bit later on. Mm. Let's go through the news first. Saudi Arabia... Mm-hmm. They unveiled the female robot a couple of years back. It was really impressive. Everyone mm-hmm. was talking about her. They unveiled this week a man-shaped AI robot called Muhammad. But he didn't make a great first impression. Muhammad attempted to grope a reporter as from the back.
Mm-hmm.
We won't get into any more details. You guys can check the video. It's a 7-second clip. It's gone viral. And she had to raise her hand momentarily to back the robot off.
Ah.
Now, everyone is talking about it. Everyone is accusing Muhammad, the robot, of being a sexual predator slash womanizer. The headlines are quite sensational. There was even a woman who claimed she was raped in the metaverse. This was a couple of months back. I don't know how you can be raped in a virtual world. It's strange to me. And I know this is a business show and we do want to stick to business, but surely we shouldn't use the business of AI to push some strange, you know, gender
I don't think the robot should be a male or female. A robot is a robot.
Robot is a robot, right. And I don't actually think that he meant to grope the reporter. I think she was just standing quite close to him.
Mm.
And I think it was probably just a reflex.
It goes back to who basically inputted the software,
right.
You know, the data that the robot has.
Right.
You know? Otherwise, it wouldn't act out of its programming.
Right.
You know, like if it's programmed to be that way, then you would have to go and ask the person that programmed it.
I mean, some of the, and I went to an event 2 days ago by an advisory called Tough Love, and the former CEO of Duo, Osman Sultan, was speaking about, you know, how everyone is concerned about AI and they think it's going to take over the world. Mm-hmm. And yes, actually, we should be worried mm-hmm. of that.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be worried about sexual harassment via robots?
I don't think so. You can destroy a robot if it goes out of hand. We don't want another Terminator situation.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I do think there is some exaggeration, though, to this, this robot story.
I believe so. I believe there's people just like to jump on a trend, you know.
Yeah.
When someone just accuses a robot, oh, that's something, you know. We're accusing robots now. Let's jump on the trend.
Yeah. We need a headline at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Let's go with it. No, I definitely think it's exaggerated, and it also takes away from the real victims of sexual harassment, right?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, it is a machine at the end of the day, guys, so mm-hmm. let's keep that in mind. Abu Dhabi's national carrier, Etihad, expects to exceed last year's annual profits, which grew, by the way, more than fivefold to $143 million last year. It's expecting even more in terms of profits this year. And it's great news because it is preparing for a potential IPO. Mm. It's the first for a major Gulf airline. And that's according to an exclusive interview with the national newspaper, by the way. We got to give credit where credit is due. The CEO told the newspaper, also a national newspaper, that what's important is that Etihad will list when it is a good time to list. They're working very hard towards that goal, but they don't want to rush into anything, and the company has to be ready for that. He said they've been improving their governance, their ECG practices, their profitability, and strengthening the balance sheet. Mm-hmm. It's really good news for Etihad because it was struggling for a very long time. It was always Emirates was the one that everyone was talking about. Emirates was the success story. Etihad was kind of the black sheep that, you know, people had very little kind of few expectations from, I guess. People at some point gave up on Etihad, I would say.
Yeah.
I would go as far as to say that. Have you flown Etihad Airways?
Yes, multiple times.
Multiple times. Yeah. Do you prefer it to Emirates? What is your opinion about it?
For me, in terms of airlines, nobody can beat Emirates in terms of quality and service. But Etihad is up there, you know, it's one of the best airlines in the world. Top three, I would say. You know, you would have the top three in my mind is Emirates, Qatar Airways, and Etihad.
What's it like on Qatar Airways? I've never actually flown Qatar Airways, but I have flown Etihad, and I like that it has a little bit more. I love Emirates, but it has a little bit more authenticity. You can kind of see the little local touches, I would say, be it the flowers or, I don't know, it's a little bit old school, but it gives you this nostalgic feeling when you fly with Etihad.
Yeah. With Qatari, it's more of luxurious. Everything and anything is luxury.
Doha is quite luxurious as well.
So in terms of Qatar Airways, their first classes. The videos that I've seen and everything.
I was about to ask if you've actually flown first class because...
I wish.
then I need to know where you're investing your money, Ali.
No. Usually what I do is, here's a, you know, sneak or a tip, you know.
Yeah.
Usually you don't book a first class ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You book a normal economy ticket.
Right.
And then you go to the airport and you ask them, is there availability for an upgrade?
Right.
And then they tell you, yes, there is.
Ah, they tell you yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes if it's not a full flight, then you can ask them. And you would only pay a fraction of the full price.
Correct.
Because you're paying for the area that's there in the airport, the lounge area, the food and everything, you know. So it's all excess, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, basically. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. What's the latest in sports? I don't want to think about first class anymore because, I mean, I don't know who said yes to you, but, you know, I've never gotten to fly first class.
I've flown to Turkey first class. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, on which airline?
Gulf Air.
Gulf Air. Yeah. What's a Gulf Air first class
or
cabin
business
look
class.
Like?
They didn't have a first class. It was business class.
Business class. Yeah, okay. Yes, yes. That's a big distinction, huh? I have flown business class for business trips paid for by the brands in the past.
On the plane. There wasn't an option for a first class because the plane itself just had business.
Right.
But the business was like first class.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I was once flying with my dad, and they gave us there was one space for the business area, and of course I gave it to my dad, obviously.
Oh.
So, right, moving on. The latest in sports, Ali, you're our sports guru. I suggested a story to you. It turned out it was all the way from Monday, so obviously that's not my thing. Go for it.
Yeah, you brought up the Ronaldo and how people say that he didn't play well. Well, if people didn't know that Ronaldo is playing in Al Nassr and they played against Al Ain.
Yeah.
In the Asian Champions League, and they lost 1-0. And a lot of backlash for Al-Nasr.
Yes.
You know, from the fans.
Yes.
But that aside, you know, we're talking about the league in general in Saudi. The attendance for the matches, not great.
Not great, okay.
Not great. Mm-hmm. There is a reason for that in terms of timing of games, promotions, not enough promoting, you know, in terms of this match is happening here, this match is happening there. But
you think that's the problem? There isn't enough promotion around the matches?
That, and aside from the top four, nobody goes to the games. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't an excitement. Like if we're talking about the Premier League, that is the best league. We say the Premier League, which is the English league. Mm-hmm. It is the best league in the world. Why? It's not just because of the quality of play, but the marketing that the Football Association, the FA, the English FA. How they market the Premier League and how the teams, the clubs themselves market themselves in such a way that they, you know, they make their fans
excited
mm-hmm. and even regular football fans would go and watch these games,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you would see every single game in the Premier League is full.
But do you think that maybe it's a cultural thing? Does the GCC or is the Arab world as excited about football?
See, we love football. Arab Khalijis love football. But one problem. We watch a lot of European football. Mm-hmm. When we come and watch our own leagues,
okay.
Huge difference in quality. In terms of broadcast, you know, in terms of quality of play, in terms of pitch, you know, refereeing. Oh my God, don't get me started with the Asian referees. Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that, you know, Ronaldo made the wrong move by joining Al-Nassr?
I don't think he made the wrong move. He saw, Ronaldo as a player, he sees an opportunity and goes for it. He saw an opportunity, well, it was his dream to go to Real Madrid from Manchester United. And he made majority of his accolades are with Real Madrid, mm-hmm. you know, his Ballon d'Ors and everything.
Yeah.
He only won one Ballon d'Or with Manchester United. And then he went and tackled the Italian league. So that's three leagues now. You have the English, you have the Spanish and the Italian league. Mm. He dominated all three. And what did he do? He elevated. Nobody was talking about the Italian league before Ronaldo even, like, before, if we're talking about, like, the early 2000s. Mm. The Italian league was up there, you know.
Yeah.
It was one of the best leagues.
Right.
Now, bottom five, like it's top five still, but like there's a huge gap in quality in terms of Spanish league and mm-hmm. English, mm-hmm. The Premier League, and even the German league. You know, huge difference.
Yeah. So you think he will? He just needs some time, but he will elevate.
He already did.
He already did. Yeah.
Yeah, he already did. Mm. In terms of nobody used to watch in terms of outside of Saudi. If we're talking the amount of people that watch the Saudi league, not that much.
Yeah.
So one thing he does is he brings his own follower bases, and as we know, Ronaldo has the highest follower count in
on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't even need to know football that you know Cristiano, you know?
True.
Like, he is that man. He is a businessman. He owns multiple businesses, you know, and he has his own brand.
Right.
You know?
So the attendance is fine,
yeah.
Then, correct?
Attendance is fine when there are big games. Mm. Like, that used to happen anyway, before. Like,
okay.
When you have Al-Nasr versus Al-Hilal. You know, or Al-Nasr versus Al-Tihad,
right.
Al-Tihad versus Al-Hilal.
So what are we expecting then? Are we happy with the current situation? Are we expecting more of an attendance, more promotion?
Mm.
Because the Saudis are putting a lot into this. They're really trying to push it.
Yeah.
Should they be doing more, or is it just a matter of it just needs time?
I believe that they're headed in the right direction because we haven't seen this. This is unprecedented in this region.
Correct.
To be specific. Like we've seen China try to do it before, mm-hmm. where they would give huge salaries, insane packages to these football players you know, from Europe, you know, and they failed. Mm-hmm. You know, that investment that they tried to make in the Chinese Football League, they failed completely. Even America, the US, the MLS, horrible. Like the way that you can sell America, the lifestyle, the it goes
the
on.
The American dream,
you know?
The American nightmare is what it is right now.
freedom, you know? That's what they sell. Mm. So these football players, they bring them like David Beckham, like Lionel Messi now in the States.
Yeah.
The quality of the league is not great, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But in terms of marketing, Americans are smart.
Right.
Yeah? Mm. But they're not successful because of the quality of the league. Mm-hmm. You can be great in marketing, but if you keep having a product that's not great, it won't do great. No matter how good your marketing is.
Sure.
You get what I mean?
That's a great point. I would love to sit and chat with you about this even more because every time we talk about football, I get more and more interested in it because you explain it in a really lovely, wonderful way.
Can I bring business terms as well now? I brought business terms into it. So
yes.
Whoever is listening to this is very happy.
Okay, right. Up next, stay tuned. We've got a guest coming in. He's an economist. He's going to teach us all about the importance of financial education. Stay tuned. Welcome to the studio, Dr. Suhaib Shahid, the founder of financial literacy startup Bespoke Options Academy here in Dubai. Welcome
Thank
to
you.
Smashy Business.
Thanks for having me.
Explain to me, you guys are based here, explain mm-hmm. to me and to listeners and the viewers exactly what it is that you do. What is financial literacy? How do you help people?
So we help people in different ways, all right? So we teach people how to, you know, generate passive income in the stock market. We help them how to, you know, invest in stocks responsibly. Mm-hmm. We also teach them how to, you know, grow their wealth responsibly. And we do it in different ways, right? So we have free workshops at the DIFC Academy. We also are in the process of putting up all of our material free online. And the reason we're doing this for free is because we don't want money to be an excuse or an impediment for people to learn about financial literacy. And for those people who want, you know, a more hands-on approach, you know, we do two-day workshops again at the DIFC Academy.
Great.
And through these workshops, we take people who know nothing about the stock market to a place where they know something about the stock market. They know how it works, why it works, and they know about our strategy. And then we offer them 3 months of support. This includes, you know, live coaching calls, events, you know, golf tournaments, for example. But they also include my own, you know, trades so that they can follow, not because for them to copy, but for them to learn about my thought process. And the reason I emphasize this is because, you know, God forbid something happens to me, I don't want my clients to stop learning and stop their journey towards financial independence.
Okay. You said responsibly invest in stocks. Is there such a thing as investing in stocks being responsible? Because it's quite risky, and it's quite volatile.
Right.
I mean, I've never invested in stocks, but I know a lot of people who invested and regretted it because, you know, they said, well, we lost so much money, we would rather invest in real estate.
Right. No, you're right. I think there are a lot of stereotypes about the stock market, a lot of misperceptions, I would say. You know, the stock market's volatile. The stock market, I know someone, my cousin, he lost money, for example.
Yeah.
But I think if you think about it, if you take a step
back. Someone's cousin that's lost money in stocks.
That's okay. Right. But if you think about it, if you take a step back, you see that one can say the same thing about any asset class. Mm. You can say the same thing about real estate. I'm sure you'll find people who say, I lost money in real estate 2008-09, or even after that. You can say the same thing about crypto or private equity or any business, right? So, and the stock market is not unique in that way. So that is why we emphasize to people that, you know, knowledge is key here, because a lot of people come to me and say, okay, how much money do I need to start trading options? And I'm like, the short answer is $2,000 in an investment account.
Uh-huh.
The long answer and more nuanced answer is that knowledge is more important than money, because once you have the knowledge, you start breaking those misperceptions or stereotypes that you had. Mm-hmm. I'll just give you an example, right? So I'm sure you've heard, you know, a lot of, you know, you guys were talking about sports a little while ago. You've heard of a lot of pro soccer players or pro, I don't know, hockey players or what have you, you know, losing all of the money and going broke after retirement, right?
Yes.
You also heard of people, you know, lottery winners going broke. They had the money, but they did not have the knowledge.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
On the other hand, I'm sure you've also heard of people who built up wealth, lost it, built it back up again, mm-hmm. because they had knowledge.
Yeah.
So that's what we emphasize here. Really, like, knowledge is key. And come to our free webinars, free workshops, because you have nothing to lose. You might just learn something.
Okay, that's great. Are you seeing more younger people investing in stocks? Well, more females as well. What is the trend?
Well, so precisely speaking, so what we teach people is how to buy stocks that they want to buy, or ETFs they want to buy, but we teach them how to do that by selling options, right? It's a very specific way we teach them how to do it. And if they want to sell their ETF or their stock, we tell them how to do it by selling options. So options are like a gateway to buying a stock, and also a gateway to sell a stock. So in terms of the demographic, a lot of our there's a wide variety. Obviously, those you know with our older demographic, they have larger accounts they're working with. Mm-hmm. The younger demographic have a smaller account they're working with. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, the small or large doesn't matter. It really comes down to the knowledge that you acquire. Because I started off with a very small account.
Okay.
I've built it over time because of the knowledge I acquired.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's talk about having that additional revenue stream. Mm. Usually it's, you know, you, because I tried to use the Sarua app once, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of just put money there and just left it for a while. Ended up taking it back for, yeah, just to go shopping with it. Very irresponsible of me. Should look into investing generally. What advice would you give people? I guess not investment advice, but when it comes to investing, how important is it to be patient when it comes to a stock? I mean, Meta is just right now paying dividends. I think the younger generation, especially, a lot of them do listen to this show. They're very impatient generally.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to be patient when it comes to this?
It's
just to help people understand,
yeah.
that, you know, it is that additional revenue stream. And
yeah. So again, a lot of folks come and ask me, so how much money will I make? And I tell them there won't be any promises, first of all. And if anyone is making you any promises, run away as fast as possible.
Right.
But for myself, I try to go for, and I emphasize on the try, because it doesn't always happen, but I try to go for 1-4% a month. But the reason I'm saying all of this is to come back to your question, which is, the most important thing is how disciplined you are. So the most important thing in terms of how much you make is how disciplined you are and your risk profile, right? So an older person would have a different risk profile than a younger person, because mm-hmm. they have kids, they might maybe have a mortgage and so on. A younger person is more risk loving anyway. But it really comes down to discipline. So as long as you're in, you know, if you have fear in one extreme and if greed in one extreme, you want to be somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And I do acknowledge it's easier said than done.
How stressful is it working in stocks? Because we've all heard the stories. I interviewed a couple of people a few months back, and one of them said, you know, because I work in stocks, I'm addicted to Xanax. It keeps me up at night.
Mm. Yeah. So I say to my clients that if a trade keeps you up at night, you did something wrong, right? You must be willing to sleep, you know, properly. So the way we teach people how to do this is that we say to them that once you've acquired the knowledge, you shouldn't be spending more than 30 minutes a day, right? And you should be only selling options on stocks you want to buy anyway, or ETFs you want to buy anyway.
Mm.
And how do you know which stocks you buy? Well, you need to do your homework. So once you've done the homework, and once you know the price you're comfortable at, you can go ahead and sell an option on a stock or on an ETF. So if you follow these guidelines, there's no reason for you to lose sleep. And I know, you know, the stock market is a big world, right? It's a different ways people do it. Some people spend all day, some people spend nights. But we spend only 30 minutes. And now at this stage, I've been doing this for a long time, I sometimes spend less than 10 minutes, less than 5 minutes, sometimes nothing, zero minutes when it comes to trading. But I think it's important to for me to emphasize what options are at this point, because
sure.
because so options are really a way to buy stocks at a discount and get paid for it. So I'll give you a insurance company analogy. So I'm sure Lubna, you have a car, and I'm sure you have insurance, and you pay premium each month to the insurance company. And the likelihood of you, bumping your car, for example, is very low, right? But you're still paying insurance every single month to your insurance company,
sure.
right? So God forbid something happens this month to your car, and your insurance company takes care of it, you still have to pay them premium this month, right? So the same thing is what we teach people how to do in the stock market. We teach them how to be insurance companies in the stock market. So for example, if there's a stock we're looking at and we sell an option, if the stock stays above that price we're comfortable with, we just get the insurance premium and that's that, mm-hmm. right? But if it goes below a certain price, we have to buy that stock and we still make that premium, and we're more than happy to buy that stock because number one, it's the stock we wanted to buy anyway. It's the stock we're buying at a discount compared to the market price. And we know it's going to go up because we've done our homework.
Right. I want to get your opinion on something, because Etihad is going to potentially list. We've had other listed companies here in the region. The stock, doesn't really go crazy. We see a lot of activity on Wall Street, NVIDIA, Meta paying investors its first dividends. What is your take on Etihad listing? Any predictions?
No, so I don't make predictions, so I won't make any predictions on the particular company. But I would say that the past year and this year have been 2 years of IPOs in the Gulf region, right? Mm. So the UAE, other countries in the Gulf. I think this just goes to show you the interest people have, not just domestic investors, but also foreign investors in the region and businesses in the region.
Okay, and when it comes to tech, do you think we'll see? I know we can't give investment advice, but just generally, your expert opinion. Do you think that, without naming any companies, do you think that? And I know we have to be careful here, but do you think we'll see more tech companies pay investors back dividends? Do you think the tech industry will see that?
Yeah, you mentioned Meta, and I think Meta won't be the only one. I think we'll see a gradual trend towards this way. I think a lot of these tech companies became overinflated and overhired during the early parts of the pandemic, and then they had to kind of deleverage, and that meant a lot of job losses too. But if you compare the people they hired and the people they fired, the difference is still positive, right? So I think that's an important thing to mention here. But I think the trend is definitely going towards what you're saying.
And when it comes to, it's great having an expert like you here, because Richard and I, who co-hosts, he's the CEO of the company and he co-hosts this with me. He's in Saudi for a leap right now. But we often talk about that when it comes to the stock exchanges here in the GCC, will there ever be kind of a merger of the stock exchanges? But I know mm-hmm. that you can't talk much about that.
Yeah, I would rather not. I think it's an interesting idea, and I think logistically it's awfully difficult to do. Mm. Just think about how
we're not famous for the logistics here.
Right.
In the region,
just think about how unified Europe is. Right.
Yeah.
But all of those countries have their own stock exchanges, mm. right? And by the way, I think what we teach people is, at least for now, is how to sell options on stocks on the S&P 500. So it's only on American-based stocks.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. I wish you had clarified that in the beginning, but
because a lot of,
no worries.
To be honest, a lot of stocks here, they don't allow for trading of options.
There are
few companies that allow trading of options.
Okay.
So there's not much of a point right now, I think.
I did not know that, to be honest with you.
But you can be here, you can sit here, you can sit in this room, and you can easily trade options on the S&P 500.
Okay. Okay. You're already educating me just during this interview. Going back to educational offerings, how can people learn on a budget, and what are the prices like? It's called an academy. Tell me a little bit about the offering so that we understand exactly what people can opt for.
Yeah, well, there are two branches. One are the free workshops we offer at DIFC Academy. We also
people
are in the
process. People can get in touch through your website to find that out.
Through our website, through social media. So we have a free workshop coming on towards the end of April. 2 days of multiple free workshops. Mm-hmm. And we're also in the process of putting all of our introductory material on a platform for free, just so that people who are interested, they can go step by step through the whole process and learn. And then we also, as I mentioned, we also have a 2-day paid workshop, and which comes with three months of support, events, communities, and so on. So we're really trying to center our business around a community, because we could have done all of this online, mm-hmm. And honestly had bigger margins, a bigger bottom line. But for us, building this around a community came first. So, and we're very happy we're doing it that way, because we really want to spread this message as much as possible, and for people to meet other people, because once you're in a community and you meet other like-minded people, not only do you get motivated, but you also start, holding yourself accountable.
Absolutely. What is the ratio of men to women? I'm just kind of curious.
It's an interesting question, because I think the finance world, the economic world, is mostly male-dominated, yeah. Right? So I would say it's 70% men, 30% women.
Okay. Yeah. How difficult is it? We talk about financial literacy. Stocks, to me, are very interesting, but there are a lot of technical, technicalities, details. You have to be very careful even when talking about it. You can't give, investment advice. There's a lot that goes into that, and it really puts a lot of people off of it.
Yeah.
How difficult is it actually to invest responsibly in stocks, to learn how to do that?
Yeah, no, it's. I will say this, that there is a learning curve, right? Especially the way we teach people, there is definitely a learning curve. You have to put in the effort. But once you've put in the effort, and I say this responsibly, it can change your life financially. You'll start looking at the investment world differently. Because if you look at our industry, right, the way it's evolved is that for the longest time, if you were interested in the stock market, you'd go to a bank or a financial advisor, fill up a bunch of papers you had no idea about. And then they would tell you that, Lubna, this fund is for you. So, hey, this fund is for you. And a year later, we'll find how much returns we made in an email or a letter. But through technological progress, what we've seen is that a lot of these professional money managers, they're not able to outperform the market. In fact, 92% of them lose money over a 15-year time span. I should correct myself, not lose money, underperform the market over a 15-year lifespan. Now,
wow.
So people started...
Scary stats.
People started thinking, well, if the pros can't do it, why don't I just put my money in an ETF, exchange-traded funds? Mm-hmm. It's safer. I have exposure to a lot of different stocks. ETFs are great because they're cheap. You cut the middleman out, and they're great for people who don't know anything about the stock market or very little about the stock market. But we're trying to push the frontier and say that just with a bit of knowledge, it won't be easy, but just with a bit of knowledge and application and some elbow grease, you are able to do as well, or in fact better than a lot of money managers. It is possible. You just need to put some time and effort in the beginning, and you should be able to handle your own money. You don't have to give your money to anyone. You should be responsible for your money, and you don't have to spend too much time on it once you've learned how to do it.
Why did you, that's great, by the way, thank you for that. Why did you decide to launch the academy?
Yeah.
Besides the services that you provide, the educational part of it,
yeah.
what triggered you to do that?
Well, when I was a kid, I did what society told me to do. Yeah, I went to school, got good grades, got a scholarship, an academic scholarship to do my master's and PhD from Switzerland in economics. And I'm glad I stopped there, because society also tells you to work until you retire, live off a pension until you die. And you know what? Even after the PhD, like I was still financially illiterate for myself, like in terms of handling my own money, right?
Right.
So
guilty over here as
right,
well.
Right. And you know, we are not the only ones. A lot of people struggle with this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until I started working at the World Bank in Washington, D.C., at the IMF in Washington, D.C., that I started learning about investing. So the reason I decided to set up Bespoke was because, you know, just because I grew up financially illiterate didn't mean my daughter had to grow up that way, right? So a lot of formally educated people, they struggle with their finances even though they make good money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it leads to problems in their marriages, it leads to issues with their health and you know, and overall, you know, decrease in their well-being. So we decided to set this up and, you know, help people, you know, gain financial independence through, you know, through our education, through the stock market, and tell them that you can do this for yourself.
Absolutely, that's really interesting. What is the vision for the academy? Where do you see it going?
Well, we want to help as many people as possible, you know, achieve financial independence through our education, right? Which is also why we have that free component there. So, you know, we keep getting good feedback from our clients. We get to hear excellent anecdotes. You know, just the other day, you know, one of our clients texted me saying that, "So, hey, now I'm able to afford a personal trainer." Right?
Wow.
Those are not small things, right? I think a lot of us who've had personal trainers, we might take it for granted, but those are not small things if we think about it. So, as long as we keep hearing these stories, we know we're on the right track. But once we stop hearing these stories, we know we need to do some course correction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I will be looking into the academy. It's really sparked an interest in me now, and it's amazing to always, you know, develop yourself. And as you said, you know, it comes into play in everyday life. We often don't think about it. We don't, you know, financially plan. You know, especially the younger generation,
yeah.
I think we don't think about it like our parents used
to. That's right.
To do.
That's right.
So, yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
it's
you.
Been absolutely brilliant. Stream us on smashy.tv. You already know where to find us on podcasts, wherever you got your podcasts, Apple, Anghami, Spotify, and we'll see you tomorrow.